Welcome to the Katakalam Project on Katakalam Media. This is Che Ting Ye. From the Arab Spring to Ukraine to Syria to Taiwan, the world seems to be once again engaged in mass social movements seeking to change the world. These protesters, most of them young students, have teamed up with another force that has changed the world, the internet, especially social media. We have heard of rebels fighting the dictatorship of Gaddafi in Libya by tweeting coordinates to NATO battleships. We have heard of Egyptian protesters gathering the masses through Facebook. In Taiwan, the recent Sunflower Movement, where students occupy the parliament for 24 days, used a variety of tech-savvy tools to gather almost 500,000 people at a rally and swept a generation of young Taiwanese into awareness and action. We talk with Sean Su, a longtime activist in both the Taiwanese-American community and in Taiwan with a specialty in new technology. During the Sunflower Movement, Sean was inside the parliament helping their media team build internet apps and English language resources available online. Our co-host Jonathan Lee caught up with him earlier and asked him the few questions we all had about technology and social movements, including, of course, just how in the world they got enough Wi-Fi at the protests. Here is their interview.
Thank you, Sean, for taking the time to talk to us this evening. We're really happy to have you on the show.
Oh, yeah, glad to be here.
So to get right into it, first question would be, we've seen a growing role of social media in a lot of these social movements, such as the Arab Spring, using different types of mediums from Facebook to YouTube to Ustream, where, you know, Taiwan is the most highly penetrated country for Facebook. How big of a role was it in the Sunflower Movement?
I think social media was absolutely a very critical, took a critical role for the Sunflower Movement. As you mentioned, Facebook does have the deepest penetration in Taiwan, more so than any other country. I mean, even my grandma's on Facebook, and she's nearing 90 years old. So in terms of communication, definitely people were using a lot of social media tools, everything from Twitter to Facebook to you name it. They also used a lot of PTT, which is very popular among youth in Taiwan. And it's sort of like Taiwan's version of Reddit, except that it predates Reddit by about one or two decades. So that's also very important. They also use TagPad or all sorts of other tools as well to disseminate information, such as things that they needed in terms of organization, spreading the word out via Facebook, you know, basically using all of these tools in order to collaborate together, so much so that frequently we would overload the towers, the cell phone towers, at the Legislative Yuan, because so many people are using the internet. You know, by the second or third day, almost all the companies had brought in their mobile towers. These are vehicles that have like cell phone towers built in on top and independent generators. And they brought in a couple of those, both to the north and south side of the Legislative Yuan.
One of the burning questions was, how did you guys still have access to the internet? A lot of folks thought the government probably would have shut it down. So from what you're saying, it sounds like that it was still kept up and companies even brought in extra towers.
Yeah, basically, we had multiple ways of connecting online. You know, within the first week, we had brought in multiple 4G wireless and WiMAX access points. You know, they're these like little devices. Well, you know, they sell them everywhere now in the world. But essentially, we brought in our own mobile routers, our own 4G or 3G devices in order to reconnect online. The Legislative Yuan does have internet. It has a wireless system and it also has an Ethernet system. But its speed is roughly about 1 megabit. It's a speed that you can't even purchase in Taiwan. I mean, case in point, if you get cable in Taiwan, I think they give you like 8 megabits for free via DSL. So it was really slow trying to get online just through the legislative chamber's existing network. So we essentially brought in our own and kind of upgraded the internet there. And by the time I left, we had maybe a dozen plus wireless access points there to connect to.
Wow, that's amazing. So with all these different forms of media that you were using, was this some sort of something that fell into place that you guys just, when you got there, like, hey, you know, why don't we just start going on after all these sources? Or was this a more well-organized effort?
I think this came actually rather naturally, in terms of spreading the word, especially about the March 30th protest. I think that came naturally because in Taiwan, people already use social media to communicate so often. That said, in terms of organization, yes, a lot of the youth, they are organizing committees, did split off into groups in order to determine what was the best way to spread the message, so to speak. And so they were really organized in terms, in a sort of ad hoc way, in terms of, you know, organizing what was needed, putting up what materials we desperately needed immediately, such as internet, water, medical supply, so on and so forth. So yeah, definitely there was, I think it felt actually most natural first and foremost. It's just the way people in Taiwan communicate. You know, Taiwan, after all, is one of the very few countries where there are more active cell phones than people. You know, I think the only other country is Luxembourg. So there you go.
Amazing. So I guess in this case, some would actually say the collective efforts of all those different forms of social media, as you mentioned, from Reddit to Facebook to PPT, you said?
PTT, yes.
Oh, PTT, yes. And Ustream really got the message out and quite honestly may have pierced the veil, quote unquote, with mainstream media in Taiwan and even what the government was blasting. Would you agree with that? And do you think social media is becoming more reliable than mainstream media, or at least in Taiwan?
Well, this is anecdotal, but most of the friends I know don't even own a television set. I have a television set, but I haven't turned it on in, I think, a year. I'm not even sure where the remote is anymore. the thing is, I mean, a lot of youth in general for a long time, they've gotten their media not from the mainstream media in Taiwan, because the mainstream media in Taiwan frequently is inaccurate. Although we were friends with a lot of the reporters and we worked side by side with them, we shared food with them, and materials and supplies, the reality is there's often news that isn't very accurate in the mainstream media. Case in point, ETTV and TVBS frequently, nonstop, kept saying that people were allowed to leave the legislative yuan, but not allowed to come back inside. And this is frequently actually untrue. We had a truce with the police officers, so we were allowed to come in and out, you know, for the most part. There were certain instances of a couple of hours in which we couldn't come in, but otherwise, you know, we had almost free flow. So there's a lot of misinformation, and we saw that ourselves. So for a lot of us, we don't really watch mainstream media. I mean, half the time, it's actually quite enraging. There's a lot of logical fallacies. They leap to conclusions. There's often smear campaigns, so on and so forth. So it was a lot easier to just watch social media on the internet or independent media on via the internet. I can give a few examples. NT, National Taiwan University, one of our best universities in Taiwan, their journalism school, they had a team there that decided, there was a team of students that decided, hey, let's create this Facebook channel and we'll put news, 24-hour news on the Sunflower Movement and everything involving it. And these guys posted news minutes after someone finished a speech, or they would post it during a speech. They would have pictures on the spot, live reporting, including photos and everything ready there. They were actually faster than the mainstream media.
Whoa.
They were actually faster than the mainstream media. So in the end, you know, not only is the mainstream media generally not necessarily accurate and sensational, you could actually get better news faster on the internet. So, you know, there's very few reasons at that point to just, you know, buy a television, buy cable, just to watch these news channels when you could just, you know, go on your browser or on your phone and get all that information in your hands.
Wow, that's really amazing. I can't imagine really being that super connected. I mean, we're all kind of connected really highly over here already, but that's really as live as it gets, I guess you could say. So I guess one possible downside of social media is people can really be easily identified. Was that a major concern at all? And are there any other downsides to social media over there?
One of the problems with being identified readily is something that the mainstream media already does in Taiwan. They have cameras everywhere. They have lots of teams with cameras. So it's quite often that, you know, they would go back to earlier footage and say, "Oh, look, this is look at so and so. See this person here. This is so and so student. Here's this person's profile." They did that obviously with Lin Fei Fang or Chen Weiting, who are I would say some of the best known faces of the Sunflower Movement. However, that is something that does happen a lot. I mean, quite often you would hear a lot of these students, their parents might not agree with them coming out to this protest. If not their parents, sometimes other relatives, and they would be seen on television in HD. And so this happens anyway. It doesn't matter if it's on social media or the internet or not, you know, chances are they'll be on TV as well. And so, you know, relatives will probably, you know, sometimes berate them or call them and tell them to go home immediately. This happened all the way since the Wild Strawberries back in 2008 during their protest all the way to now. This is just simply the state of affairs in Taiwan. And it's because we have a lot of mainstream media news channels that serve these that serves a lot of coverage of these kind of events anyway. And actually, in a way, TVBS and other channels that may not be very a big fan of, let's say, the Sunflower Movement, are always sure to try to make sure that they get the faces of students in there in order to try to, you know, get them sort of, so to speak, known. And does that cause complications? Yes. But, you know, it happens anyway, regardless of the internet.
Wow. Thank you for all that. That's kind of scary at the same time, but, you know, it's on one sense, you're saying that it's already being done. So I guess folks are used to it to some level.
I should add not only that, the police frequently carry cameras all over at every protest. They're the CID, the Criminal Investigation Division, I believe they're called. I just call them CID. They carry cameras everywhere. And they frequently record anybody that they can coming in and out. Usually they're at the top of buildings recording or other places. At one point, they did bring in two cameras inside the Legislative Yuan, much to everyone's chagrin. So, I mean, obviously, I'm sure you know about how there were over 200 students that were identified by the police, and the set list was then later leaked to the media of students that were told by their parents, or they were sent messages saying that they would be investigated and prosecuted and persecuted.
Both of them. Wow, very scary. Well, to switch gears a little then, could you talk a bit about the efforts to use technology to make governance itself more user-friendly, like the gov.tw or g0v.tw people are doing?
All right. There's actually quite a few groups, not only G0V.TW, that are there, you know, collectively done by the citizenry in order to try to keep tabs on what the government is doing. In Taiwan, we don't have sort of a news channel like C-SPAN or C-SPAN 2, where people can just turn on their TV if they have cable and watch what the government is doing. We don't exactly have that as a television station. We do have some of that on the internet, but it doesn't cover everything that goes on. Quite a lot of it is not shown, so people are not aware. Now, for the youth, G0V.TW serves that function, and it's run independently to let people know what the government's doing. But if you're part of an older generation, chances are you get your news from TV. And if that is the case, then there's very little for you to get a good idea of what's going on in government except through these mainstream media news channels. Now, this is a very big problem because if you have something like certain channels, they have an agenda to push, and so you often don't get the complete picture. But that's what movements or things like G0V.TV, TW, or G0V.Today are for, which is essentially to inform the public on what really is going on in our government and what's being said by certain legislatures and so forth and so on.
Yeah. Got it. So then, kind of to conclude this interview and conversation, all very fascinating, by the way, thank you again. What do you think of technology's role in any movement going forward? And really also just in Taiwan too, thinking that, well, we've seen how successful this can be. Will the government or forces that may be might challenge that in some way, just shut off the switch, a blackout, or even start their own sort of social media movements or campaigns to counteract?
This is actually a larger question. Yes, the government is trying to counteract it. Like one movement that was started was called the Carnation Movement. I don't really consider it a movement, but they basically tried to round up a couple of people to act as a counter-protest to make the news. So they assembled about 300 people, and they took out, I think, carnations in order to say, okay, look, there is a counter-movement, and then they did try to put it on Facebook and other places. But it hasn't really spread really far, simply because I just don't think it's that genuine. A lot of the people, sometimes when you ask them, what are you here for? They may not be sure. Kind of like recently, there was a leopard protest in Miaoli. They wanted to destroy a habitat for some of Taiwan's native species in order to build a cremation center, a factory, and so on and so forth, and then all of a sudden, you know, there's these guys who come in and they're a counter protest and they're brought in, but it doesn't really work that successfully because with systems like Facebook, you have to be a real person to ask somebody to come to your protest. You usually have to be a real person. So if you try to spawn something like that artificially, it doesn't really gain traction. And we've seen that for a lot of things, such as, you know, there was an anti-sunflower movement that tried to pop up the first week, and that just fizzled out immediately. So I don't think those kind of things really work so easily in terms of the government's end. Now, on the students' end, or in terms of youth in using social media, it's going to be shown more often, and this actually is really helpful because people getting attacked, cops abusing people, cops covering up their ID numbers behind riot gear. These things were all caught by mobile phones or other mobile devices. During the executive yuan, a cop was caught, moving his stacking up chairs, trying to create a barricade. We still don't know what that's about. But they tried to say the students did that. There was also other people, I think Lynn Miles, he used a cell phone or something to take photos of, there was the click scandal, which was the executive yuan forcing their employees to click 50 times a day to a website and signing it off on a sheet, just to try to make their website seem like it was more trafficked. That kind of thing. More will be seen. I mean, the government can try to cover up as much as it wants, but as we can now instantly upload videos and we have things like Ustream, we can instantly stream information. It's very difficult for the government to pull something off. We had a Ustream stream there almost the first day of the legislative yuan occupation, and this made it very difficult because, you know, we were using 4G at the time. So even if the government cut off the internet, cut off the power, you know, our flashlights, the iPads, streaming via mobile devices would have seen any misconduct at the police. would carry out or possibly carry out. And so it's very difficult for the government to move in this kind of scenario, even if they tried to cut off the internet locally.
Wow. Any sort of new technology, though, or bigger role? Like, are we going to start seeing drones flying around?
There were drones. Quite a lot, especially. We had drones flying around every so often. During the protests outside, you could often see a drone fly across every couple of days, sweeping shots. There were actually directors and people making a documentary of this protest at the spot during the protest. Huh. So that footage was real. There's some documentaries that would be coming out and of the Legislative Yuan and other places, and you will see amazing shots. And that was done by new technology, new mobile rigs and robotic devices that could literally string across a rope that was just tethered moments before, so you could get sweeping shots of student protesters. And none of them are actors, they're real. And you'll see that, including that inside of the Legislative Yuan. I was there when they started filming inside for a documentary. So with these kind of technologies, yes, we did see drones. Somebody even had a robot with a camera built in. There were people with spherical cameras that were able to take 3D imaging of all the walls and everything in color and in 3D. So you'll be able to walk around the Legislative Yuan and experience it in 3D, all the posters that were pasted on the walls and notes and other things, made by the students, for the protest. You'll get to see all that pretty soon, too. There were also, of course, 360 kind of Google view, Street View sort of cameras there, too. All sorts of technology was brought in. And on the last day, when we were leaving the occupation and we had a stage outside the south side of the Legislative Yuan, there were multiple drones, at least two or three of them, that were flying across, including one that was following Chen Weiting and Lin Feifang's exit from the Legislative Yuan. So there was that too. So yes, definitely you'll see just more of this as time goes on.
That's amazing. I can't believe how much technology has progressed that it's been ingrained and so heavily leveraged in a movement. Besides also the, we saw Dyson also join the protest movement as well to help clean up the Legislative Yuan. That's jokes aside. Sean, I just really want to say thank you for taking the time to talk to us today. That was really insightful to hear how technology has played such a large role in the Sunflower Movement. And we'll be excited to hear how it's going to be used going forward.
All right. Thank you very much.
And that was our interview with our co-host Jonathan Lee and our guest Sean Su. Bet you didn't know they had drones flying around at the Sunflower Movement. You've been listening to the Katakalam Project on Katakalam Media. Find this on our website at katakalammedia.com. That's KETAGALAN media.com. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks for listening, and tune in next time.